acknowledge that we're on the traditional lands of the Kaurna people. We respect their elders past and present. I let everyone know that the audio is being recorded and publicly available. Does any elected member wish to foreshadow a potential conflict of interest with something on the agenda? No. Then we'll keep going. Would someone like to move confirmation of the minutes and the communications en bloc? Moved, Councillor Masika. Seconded, Councillor Telfer. All those in favour? Thank you. Just checking something with governance. Sorry, it's just this agenda problem that I continue to grapple with elected members when there are headings suggesting that something is coming up, but in fact there's no content to it, so there's really no need for the heading, but we move on. There are no adjourned items. So I've had revised advice from governance that it's the appropriate time of the year for elected member verbal communications. If anyone wants to crow about something in their ward or inform us, 3 minutes you have if you wish to take advantage of that. I'll let everyone know that we'll have some light refreshments in the Mayor's Parlour if we finish before 9:30. Some encouragement. But over to you, members, if anyone wishes to make a report.
I'll ask Council and those members who were involved in the DAP that the proposed extension to the telecommunications tower at the Warradale Army Barracks was a contentious issue in the area. In fact, there was an initial attempt to go to the ERD court to oppose that. Right from the outset, Mr. Mayor, was asked if landlord's consent had been obtained, and staff assured the community that that was the case. However, that proved not to be. The advice is from Senator Maurice Payne, the Minister for Defence, that she will not provide landlord's consent for the extension, and that once again history repeats itself, because this happened back in 2005 where Robert Hill also denied landlord's consent. So the City of Marion could have saved all that time and money.
Point very well made. Do staff wish to respond?
Through the Chair, I'll need to take that on notice to understand why that information wasn't provided to Council. There was obviously a miscommunication, but I'll follow it up and provide a report back.
Thank you, Councillor. Any others? Then we'll keep moving. Would someone like to move confirmation of the minutes of the Infrastructure and Strategy Committee meeting? Moved, Councillor Hutchinson. Seconded, Councillor Schilling. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. There's a confidential item for those in the gallery. I don't think it should take too long, but nonetheless, there's some costing, etc., involved in this item in relation to the Marina Outdoor Pool. Would someone like to move the appropriate confidentiality provision? Councillor Bilescu, and seconded Councillor Crossland. All those in favour of the confidentiality provision? Yes, that's carried unanimously. So unless you're named in the report, members of the gallery will have to depart for a short period, please. Well, would somebody, or perhaps a very brief outline of why we need to deal with it, subject to any desires of members to alter what we have on the pages as printed? But elected members, obviously, you need to check that where your name is, it's where you want it to be. Councillor Crossland. Thank you. Is that seconded? Councillor Duncan, did you wish to speak? No? Then I'll put your question. Councillor Hull.
I take it that the organisations will contact us to provide us with venues and...
It's a fair question. It's governance who have been communicating with the groups. What do we think the expectation is? Mr. Waits, do you want to answer? Or?
Sorry. In most cases, the groups, where the groups responded, they provided those meeting details to us. Some of them, I just need to clarify which Monday of the month, for example, it might be. But we will be contacting all of the clubs to let them know who their elected member is and provide them with the elected member contact details and that as well. So, yes, we will let you know all the details of what we have and then also put you in contact with the clubs.
All right. Any other questions? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. We're on page 40, single-use plastics discussion paper. So obviously there's some moves afoot at state government to restrict plastic use. There's a very comprehensive submission prepared by our staff in response to the discussion paper that you have in the agenda. The submission, where does that begin? Page 85. So quite comprehensive, and I could say the general tone of it supportive of a restriction in plastics usage. Councillor Hull, did you have a question?
Yeah, just a question. Can administration tell us, if we were to adopt this, what are the basic expectations of the council and changes that we would have to make? For example, I can see three plastic bottles on the dais. Would that be a consequence of voting for this, that we wouldn't have plastic bottles, as one example? Or
all right, let's just take else? That example, if management could respond. But just to clarify the question, it's not so much if council adopted this, it's rather if state government made more restrictive rules in accordance with our submission, what would be the impact? Ms. Byrne.
Whether plastic bottles would be included in a single-use plastic ban depends on the detail to which the state government introduces legislation. Ideally, we'd like to see a tool that has flexibility so that over time various plastic items could be included in that. But for the current situation with, and based on the experience of Council's ban, we've not listed plastic bottles among a specific list of items that we'd like to see targeted in the short to medium term with this legislation. But we would like to see a flexible instrument such as a law or tool that will allow other plastic items to be incorporated, especially ones that are not recyclable.
Very moderate, very sensible. Councillor Hutchinson, you wanted to move accordingly?
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. look, I think our council could be considered to be ahead of our time. We're in August 2018. We started this discussion. It was actually the month before, I think. And we had a sensible outcome, and I think where this consultation paper is going is that sensible outcome as well, but across the state. So I wholeheartedly support it, and kudos to Minister Spears for it.
You, Councillor Telfer.
When you go to the rubbish dump and you see all those millions of purple plastic bags, And this, what's written here talks about, on page 88, all about compostable bags, number 23, item 23 particularly. Is there more that we could be doing, or does this suggest that we should be doing more in that whole area of compostable bags?
Ms. Byrne?
Through the chair, I think that's exactly what the submission is putting forward as a position to the state government, that across as a statewide approach, that there is a more coordinated approach to phasing out plastic bags regardless of whether they're lightweight, biodegradable, and that the natural product choice to take that space in everyday use would be compostable bags.
And Councillor Telfer, did you, in you seconding the motion, do you wish to speak further? Anyone speaking against or question? Councillor Hull?
Mr. Mayor, this really needs to be linked with the issue we're having with the China sword problem. It's all very well to say that we'll actually deal with all this plastic, and I will be voting for this just on principle, but there's two big questions to ask. Will the state government start to regulate packaging? Because that's part of the problem. Like, go and buy a TV.
What's the other question?
And the other one is the other end about creating markets, particularly using our waste levy, Mr. Mayor. So if we do have plastic, or any other, could be aluminium, that there is actually somewhere for it to go rather than it ending up in landfill or not having a market for the recyclable product. So that...
Two good questions. What is the state government doing to reduce packaging? What is the state government doing to promote products for recycled waste so that there's demand to obviously influence the supply in the market? Anyone here from the state government? No? Well, Ms. Byrne, would you like to hazard a guess?
Through the chair, I can comment to the extent of what's stated in the submission about some of the federal targets around compostability and recyclability of products that they have stated as a goal for the nation to work towards, which filters down to state and local levels and the actions that we take and the policies that we endorse. I think while this doesn't explicitly refer to the China sword situation, that sits as an underpinning context that this whole discussion paper and community consultation process does relate to, in terms of working towards circular economy for the use and disposal of packaging and moving away from single-use packaging to items that are more recyclable, which will have some relationship to improving recycling markets by having more recyclable products.
Well, the other part of the question is significant because there may be scope for council action. Might have been a year or two that I wrote to one of the managers at council, not present here tonight, with a question about how we could incorporate recycled plastics, for example, into road construction, and it was pretty well put off, I could say. And perhaps Mr. Lyons, because you look after all of that construction side of things, is there scope for Marion Council or working with other councils to mandate in our tendering process some recycled product, for example, when it comes to road fill components?
In road product is inevitable, it's going to happen. And our big contractors like Downer is already trialling those sorts of things. So it's going to happen, it's going to be used in the future, and we'll get to the stage where we can insist that it can be incorporated.
Right, thank you. Want to follow up, Councillor Hull?
Is there some way we can embed in the motion those two points, that we encourage the state government to look at encouraging businesses to actually reduce the amount of material that's used in packaging, and also on the other end to actually use the waste levy monies that they've been collecting to create research and development, and and markets.
All right, I get the idea of the question. Could I ask Ms. Byrne, what's the deadline for the submission?
Through the Chair, the deadline is this coming Friday, so there is the opportunity to make minor amendments to the submission prior to then.
What really concerns me at the moment is trying to incorporate those points on the run. We've had a week to prepare for the meeting, and it, that was the time probably to come up with some alternative wording. But I'm certainly reluctant to encourage it being done on the run. But if you've got some written amendments ready, please bring them up.
Well, I don't, but I'd have the confidence in the staff who were listening tonight to pick up the points that are being made. And
perhaps the way we could do it is this. If you are willing to entrust it to staff, and I'm not sure who was going to, whether it was the Mayor or someone else was going to send off the submission, but perhaps the covering letter could raise those points, and then some thought could be given about appropriate wording. Would that satisfy you, Councillor Hull?
Yep.
So, Ms. Byrne, you're willing to take that on board? Yep. Thank you. It just saves us spending some time trying to get the wording just right. Now, Councillor Crossland had a question.
Thank you, Your Worship. It's probably a question on notice to Mr. Lyons. Perhaps we could have some information on the success of plastics in road base, which has been trialled by Onkaparinga Council. That's been trialling, I'm not sure for how long, but probably enough to get a feel of whether it's successful or not. And then perhaps maybe Councillor Hall could look at that as an option of another different resolution.
Indeed, that would be a very good topic for a report to the Infrastructure and Strategy Committee. Not just the Onkaparinga trial, but more generally where it's been tested. I'm hearing that it's increasingly being rolled out in other jurisdictions, Eastern States in particular. Thanks, Mr. Mifsud. Councillor Valescu? Councillor Valescu, can I just ask where you're heading with this? Is it an amendment, or are you speaking against the motion, or you've got a question?
And it shouldn't be just single-use plastic. It would be short-use or minimal-life plastic, because whilst we have the, you know...
Councillor, would you be happy for that to be a third point to be added in the cover letter?
Yes.
If staff could use discretion to at least raise the issue with state government. Clearly the focus of their paper is on single-use plastics, but you make a point about how it could be broadened to address those concerns. Would you be happy with that?
Yeah, I'll be happy with that. And look, a lot of that stuff comes from overseas as well, and sometimes you've got you've got that to the detriment of some of the local produced items. So.
Sure. Thank you. No one speaking against or amending, then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. And thanks for that extra work in the covering letter to raise those additional issues. Page 92, a proposal to have the ASO at Warraparinga. A question from Councillor Telfer.
Yeah. Given in Appendix 2 the list of costings, is the main stage, which would obviously have the 47 ASO performers on it, is that listed as part of the marquee summary, the $9,000, or I can't see the main stage listed independently there.
Just bringing up Mr. Clark and Ms. Vogren, who have been involved in putting this proposal together.
Through the Chair.
Stage costs for the ASO must be at the top. So their fee structure includes GFE and also deductions.
Okay. Yes, Councillor Telfer.
If we had another event that was there and used other performers and not the ASO, given the ASO is 47 performers outdoor, and I'll speak to that later, but is there ways that we could support the Electric Fields Band with other bands and still put on a successful and more limited program?
Clearly that's an option. I think that's probably a matter for decision for council, but would you like to comment, Ms. Vogren or Mr. Clark?
Through the chair, I'm not too sure if that would, I suppose, be consistent with the idea of an iconic event which council discussed last year. For the particular the new members, we'd identified three potential iconic events: a puppet festival, an Asian night noodle market, and also the ASO at Waiapuringa. That was the ASO at Waiapuringa was the one which council decided let's pursue. They thought that was most consistent with an iconic event for the city.
Well, the new council might be after an iconoclastic event. Did you have any further questions, Councillor Telfer?
No.
No?
Well, if the motion
third one.
Failed, would it be possible to foreshadow another motion on that topic, but not necessarily?
Yes, it would.
ASO.
I mean, the important thing is not that we've got a label iconic event, but rather that an event, a major entertainment event is being proposed. The exact content of it is something that is really going to be up to council to provide guidance on, and then staff can go away and work on it. But if this motion fails, the motion as printed, then it would probably be appropriate tonight to look at to suggest an alternative, if Councillor Telfer, you have that in mind, and we can test just the level of appetite for such an event and how big and how expensive we want it to be. Councillor Blescu.
I want to know what information we've got in regards to other symphony orchestra events. So the MSO have the Sydney Meyer Free Concerts, Symphony Under the Stars, so Sydney Symphony, Perth Symphony have items, and also the Gold Coast Symphony. Now, most of those are free events, so I'd like to know what information we have about how they do it, and also the sponsorship arrangements with those as well.
Ms. Vogren?
What information do we have about other symphony orchestras that run these free events?
Okay, so the budget that we developed here was actually in consultation with the Adelaide Symphony Orchestra based on their previous alfresco events and activities. So the production costs, the additional costs that they need, the crowd numbers that we were expecting for this style of event, we worked that through the ASO, but also a subcontractor that delivered those events as well.
So the other events...
Sorry, just Mr. Clark wanted to add something.
So just to add to that, we didn't actually go to the MSO or any other organisations. We worked directly with the ASO, have experience in delivering outdoor concerts of this nature. And the other part of your question was in relation to sponsorship. We have actually gone out to a number of local companies to see if they would be interested in putting some sponsorship. And as you see in the report, there has been some indicative interest in sponsoring the event. If this motion was to get up tonight, then we would also be looking to see if other local, more corporate sponsors may wish to come on board as well, so to try and reduce the cost to council.
So it could be something like the Seaview Footy Club ASO concert or something like that.
Not of that nature, but well, something similar, yes.
Okay. Councillor Valescu?
I guess I wanted to know how we're... Obviously, we've looked at how they do it in Adelaide. I just wanted to know whether we looked at how they do it in other places.
I think that's been answered, not in detail, no.
There's anything comparable that they've done, and possibly any considerations there as far as numbers and sponsorship.
So anything comparable that ASO has done?
The events that the ASO have run previously, they have organised themselves. So in relation to receiving the best advice possible for staging an outdoor event at Warraparinga, we feel confident that their site visit and our walk around the site presented us with the dollar amount that would be needed to project at that particular site. So looking at other locations where these sort of style of performances have occurred, they are site specific. So Warraparinga, you know, it has limited power access outside. It has limited toilet facilities outside. So each location is very site specific, which is why working with the ASO, doing a walkthrough on the site was the best way for us to understand exactly the infrastructure and equipment we would need to stage this event there.
And just to add to that, this would really be the first of event of its type. And after having a walkthrough with the ASO, they're actually quite excited at the possibility of staging there and with the possibility of joining with the Indigenous community to be able to actually celebrate what the site represents to more of a broader community as well.
Councillor Masika.
Through the chair, it's nice to see that the council trying to organise something for the residents. But I'm quite troubled with the... especially the cost involved to host up this event, because you look up the orchestra itself, it's going to play for 1 hour.
So, Councillor, did you have a question, or do you want to save that for the actual debate a bit later?
My question is, I would like to see the income, how much money is coming in, with not only expenses. We see the expenses there, but where the money is going to come, because if there are going to be some sponsorship, I need to see the breakdown, that this will be the sponsorship, and then we decide, are we going to subsidize some form of entry fee for the event, although it can be close to free, but it's somehow, but it's spending up $135 for this event at the moment without knowing where the money is coming from. It's become a little bit...
So the proposal at the moment is that it would be free for people to attend, and therefore ratepayers are collectively paying for it, subject to any comments about sponsorship. Would you like to add to that, Mr. Clark?
Yep. So, as I indicated earlier, the only sponsorship that we'd be expecting at this stage would be speaking to a couple of local companies who have indicated they would be investing up to $20,000, and the possibility of other corporate sponsorship that we would go to if this motion was successful tonight. I can't give you an exact figure at this stage as to how much that will reduce. But what we think is at this stage, the maximum budget that we'd be looking for would be $135,000 tonight.
All right. Councillor Masika?
The second one, I see you've put up the number 5,000, 7,000 people expected to attend. How did you come with that number? Well, this is a council-driven, it's not a community-driven event. How do we be sure that 5,000 people are going to show up on the end of the day?
Yes, who'd like to answer that?
Well, just Councillor in terms Conn, of Conn. of the numbers, that's an estimate based on the available space that's there on the two fields at the LKCC. So the maximum number of people who could fit in that space is about 7,000 people.
And the sponsorship, I don't know if you can clarify that any further.
The sponsorship at this stage was a total amount of $20,000, bearing in mind that because it hasn't been adopted, we haven't been in a position to give complete details to potential sponsors in relation to what the event looks like. So what they're attracted to is the uniqueness of this event being the ASO at Warraparinga.
All right, look, there are quite a few other questions. Councillor Pfeiffer. There were others first, but I've lost track of the order, so probably just easier if you want to. I'll go around the horseshoe.
Sure. I recall this going as much as I could previously, but can some of the clarify what was the reasoning for us actually looking
That's the way it was originally put up, that the so-called iconic events, whether it be markets or whether it be a food event or whether it be the ASO, it was always cast as free entry. Sure. Going around, Councillor Hull.
The contingency for adverse weather, is there any contingency, or will it just be an absolute loss if horizontal rain on the day? Have we got any contingency?
I know when we had a problem at Cove,
at the Anzac Day celebration, for example. But in this case, there's a lot of money attached. So
it was the concert at the Cove was the probably closest example to what you're talking about. Was comprehensively insured, despite massive disappointment for a number of people, not least the staff. But who would like to answer that? So it wasn't a financial loss to council as a result of the insurance, but obviously staff time and disappointment, but not a financial loss in terms of the budget. So, question, Ms. Brockman.
Yeah, so through the chair, we would be seeking event cancellation or abandonment insurance, and with that being an outside event, we would seek parameters with the insurer to ensure extreme event conditions where the event would then be fully refunded the costs.
Question.
Mr. Mayor, I'd be happy to move a motion.
Right, we'll keep going with some questions before we do that. Councillor Hutchinson.
Thank you, Your Worship. Just through to the staff, can you just remind me how much we invested in Concert at the Cove financially?
To the nearest 10,000 will do.
62,500 was the...
Other questions, Councillor Crossland?
Yeah, mine's on the lines of Councillor Pfeiffer's. My concern is that you have ratepayers, so 90,000 people have paid for an event, of which only 7,000 can go. So my question is, how do we choose who pays for it but doesn't get to go? And how do we ensure that it is City of Marion ratepayers that are actually getting a Guernsey rather than obviously other people who aren't in our council area going for free?
Who'd like to answer that? Ms. Rockgren?
So through the chair, the first question was about just in terms of the numbers on the site. We estimated conservatively around 7, but really the site we can turn over for this event, so it could be anywhere between 7,000 to 10,000 people actually at the event, bearing in mind that we would expand the site, which takes in all of Warraparinga, both fields and either side of the driveway area, so activating that whole space. In relation to the City of Marion residents being given an opportunity to attend this event, we've looked at a couple of booking programs that we would use to promote firstly to our residents in relation to being able to secure a ticket to this particular event. We did look at ticketing initially in relation to cost recovery, and the implication with a ticketing system is then we need to add infrastructure costing such as fencing, a ticketing system, staff to actually resource the area to manage the site in relation to the ticketing process as well. And Warraparinga, as you can imagine, isn't the easiest site to secure with fencing. So the best option for this was to go with a free, unticketed space.
Yes, just thinking that if you did have 7,000 people and tickets were $20 and $10, no one would complain about it to see the ASO, but you'd have a pretty substantial cost recovery, just thinking. But as you say, how much extra for fencing, security, ticketing, commissions on tickets, etc. Is there any rough figure on that? I'm just asking staff. Not at this point.
And that would be the follow-up question. So if you end up with 30,000 people trying to push their way in, how are you going to cope with it if you haven't got fencing, security and infrastructure?
Yep, through the chair. One of the areas we did discuss, and I think we mentioned it in that we did actually mention it in the report, is that we would ticket field one where the stage is set up, so in the diagram. The main reason for that is so that we could actually manage the risk for that particular field because there's one bridge overpass. So we looked at offering a free booking or a ticket for that space so that we could manage entry exit points for that area and then leave the rest of the site unbooked or unticketed.
So would it be possible, therefore, to have a area that is ticketed, that it has a cost attached for the premium areas and the rest of the site free?
Yes, if you chose to add a ticket to this event, if that's what you decided in terms of cost recovery, then we could ticket this event and add a cost to it.
Hutchinson. Thank you, Your Worship. Could just staff just remind me how many people attended Concert at the Cove?
Two and a half to 3,000 people. Sorry, in the rain. Sorry, the November one?
Yeah.
In the rain, 2.5 to 3.
So this proposal was to cater for about three times the number of people for half the cost. No, sorry, for double the cost.
Correct.
Yeah, all right. Okay, members, I thought someone might move a procedural motion, but Councillor Hull indicated he wished to move a motion, so we can test that, and if somebody during debate wants to put things off for further investigation, they can. Councillor Hull.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to give this a go, and I think it needs to be made clear that it is a work in progress, and this can be adjusted. It's a malleable situation right now, subject to funding. Now, today you would have received emails indicating that the Adelaide Symphony Orchestra do not conduct events in the open. It just happens to be that there's a great event called the Opera in the Outback, where Dame Kiri Te Kanawa, my pronunciation is rubbish, but actually performed at that event. It was very successful. People travel for thousands of kilometres to go to that event. It actually obtained a lot of sponsorship. And you could research that if you wanted to on Google. This is a big one for the City of Marion. We've never done anything like this before. And maybe, is this Marion coming of age of some sort? Is this Marion struggling up out of the working class suburbs of the southwest of Adelaide, the car manufacturing, and is this a sign that we're moving into another era of expectation? I think it's worth a go. But the motion that I'd like to put, Mr. Mayor, is that point one, notes this report, two stages, the Adelaide Symphony Orchestra ASO at the Warrapringa on a date to be fixed. There's a whole bunch in that, 2019, consistent with the run sheet at Appendix 1, refers the $135,000 cost subject to 50% sponsorship to stage the ASO at Warrapringa in 2019-20 annual budget process for further consideration. Now, I don't think we should rule out having people wanting to pay more to be in the mosh pit, if I can put it that way. If you go to events in the parklands, in the botanical parklands of Adelaide to see whoever perform there, Neil Young or the Beatles or whoever might come along, You pay more if you're sitting closer to the action. And I think Councillor Crosland made that point.
Councillor Hull, in light of your comments, do you want to broaden that to say through sponsorship or cost recovery? And I say that because I thought you were talking about cost recovery, which may or may not be corporate sponsorship, if you see what I mean. It could be
a mix of...
I'm just checking if you are envisaging possibly also some paying customers.
Well, I indicated from the outset I'm malleable with this, and I think the council should be malleable with this just to make it work more than anything else, rather than just chuck it out as an expensive dream.
Now Councillor Hull, I'm going to extend your time to finish what you're saying, but I'm just thinking about... Well, it hasn't even started, how about that? But... all right, I'll extend it. But...
Maybe it just seems to me, the air conditioning system.
It just seems to me that one I had thought, because of some of the comments in the questions, that members might be interested in getting further information about cost recovery by way of ticketing and or sponsorship. Seems to me that the motion as it was originally printed, or with Councillor Hull's version of that motion, allow for a further report to be brought back and for further direction to be given about the ticketing aspect of it. I mean, it doesn't actually say it has to be free for everyone or some people or whatever at the moment. So, I was thinking that one way to resolve this little dilemma is to put it off and get more information. The problem with that is that I suspect we actually need to book the ASO sooner rather than later if it's going to go ahead at all. So it might be that if people think that it should be this ASO concert and then we decide some of the parameters and conditions, then this sort of motion would do the trick. It allows staff to actually go and book the thing, but members may want to come back and put some parameters around attendance, which indeed is what Councillor Hull is trying to do. Councillor Hull, I'll let you go on. Thank you.
Well, as it's written, I'm pretty happy with that, because I think it gives the staff a bit of flexibility to actually meet the concerns of the council. Now, obviously, it's cost. And I don't think it's an unreasonable expectation. There's $20,000 that we know of. And you make a good point that once that you can confirm that it's a goer, then people, it could be the Accor hotel chain or whoever, might want to actually buy into it as well, because people might actually come in and need accommodation. It might be hotels or whatever. It could be an airline. But it does actually allow you to get on with the job. It sets you a task and parameters to work within. I think that's important. And it does give this a fighting chance of succeeding, because there is a danger here tonight that we just vote it out and it doesn't happen at all. And I think that would be a shame. I just think that this is worth giving it a go. Comparing it to the event at the Cove, well, it's like comparing it to how many people went to the Townsville floods, like, or went to the Tasmanian bushfires to have a look. Not many. Because it was adverse weather conditions. It really is not fair to compare that event to what this could possibly be. It could be that we're unlucky to have a stinking hot day. But that's Australia, and we've got to actually try and give these events a go. Otherwise, we wouldn't have the fringe, we wouldn't have outdoor events at all if we had that outlook on outdoor events in Australia. So I seek a seconder.
I regularly go to ASO concerts. In a week's time, I'm going to Symphony for Our World in Elder Park. It has a proper stage that will shelter the musicians. That was one of my major concerns, and I did hear back that that was part of the contract, so that was reassuring. But the Symphony for Our World, which is an ASO event at Elder Park, is a tram ride or a car ride or a train ride away. So I actually think that having something in the metropolitan area is not so iconic. There are events, they are staged, they are big events in the middle of the city. They are accessible. I would rather use 70,000 for upgrading the ceiling of Perry Bar Farm. I think we're busy with infrastructure still. I don't feel the time's right for this. I just have that gut feeling that it's not where we're at. And if we had an event that had the electric fields and had some backing maybe for $10,000, yes, I'd be more comfortable. But I actually vote against this and then foreshadow that maybe we can defer it and look for something that's more modified.
Anyone else speaking in favour? Councillor Pfeiffer.
Thank you, Your Worship. I'll speak in favour, but I'm cautiously in favour. One thing, through you, Your Worship, and with the permission of the mover and seconder, can we change point three to be subject to receiving at least 50%?
That was, I think, the intention, Councillor Hull. If it's more, it's money in the bank,
yeah,
isn't it?
I don't want to get to 50% and then say, oh, so that's it, we're done.
Mover and seconder agree. Thank you.
Thank you, Worship. Look, I am cautiously supportive of this. I was very supportive last time when it came to council. I think in terms of the cost recovery side of things, there's an event, I think, in April at Tanunda, an ASO event, indoor event at Tanunda. And for that event, they're charging $47 a head. Now, there's other events for the ASO which charge up to $120 a head. If there was only 5,000 people attending and we're going for full cost recovery with no sponsorship whatsoever, we'd need to be charging $27 a head. So, well, even for full 100% cost recovery, it's really not that expensive for an ASO event. It's basically half the price of a cheap ASO event. So I think, yeah, pushing the cost recovery significantly, trying to push up that sponsorship would be really good. It would be a fantastic event. I'm cautiously supportive. I am conscious of the fact that we're not music promoters or promoters of any sort. We've got some great experience in doing smaller scale concerts, especially with the Cove and the like. But look, yeah, let's just see how this one goes and then take it from there. Thank you.
Anyone else speaking against? Councillor Vlescu.
Look, I'm looking at this both ways. I do see the value of having an iconic event. I'm a big fan of the ASO and I think it'd be great to expose as many of our residents to their performances. I would like to know, after I've stopped talking about what work they're planning to do in the schools in the lead up to this. But I guess it just doesn't seem like it may be the best venue for an event like this. I think this has, especially free, has the ability to attract a lot of people unless the weather's a bit bad. And I, you know, when we talk about 5,000 people and there's one bridge, I'm a bit worried about that, because if people have to evacuate that area and there's only one little bridge, where are they going to go? Like, it just, I don't know if that's the right venue for something that could be that huge. You know, maybe we look at, you know, if we are looking at a classical theme, you know, we've got the Australian String Quartet, we've got the Gregorian Brothers, you know, there's other classical music ensembles of a really high calibre we could get, and they're much cheaper. Yeah, I don't know if this is the right area for it. And it's really sad, because I'd like to see them. If it was my money, I would have no problem if I had that sort of money. But it's not my money. It's the residents' money, and it is quite a huge cost. And I'm not happy to... I'm happy with the intent of the third part of the motion. However, what happens if we don't get the 50,000? We'll have to pay, because we would have signed in a contract with the ASO to lock them in so we can start getting sponsorship. So, I'm lineball about this one, but I think based on the information we've got, and I would have liked to see more information about the sponsorship arrangements. You've got the Helen and Gregor Ramsey Trust. They support art projects. You know, there's other things, and they weren't even looked at or considered. So if this fails and it's going to come back again, a bit more information would be great. Thank you.
Anyone else speaking in favour? Councillor Pryor.
Councillor Pfeiffer. I like the principle. Okay, I like the idea of getting the ASO to our residents who may not be able to afford $100 a ticket, because I mean that's pretty steep to go and see some music, if you can see music. I think some of the risks we will be able to work around, particularly the cost recovery one. I mean, if we wind up getting 50% support in sponsorship, then the argument is we probably wouldn't ticket it. If we wouldn't get that high level of sponsorship, then ticketing is always an answer for us to recover costs. I think this event has the potential to be something really special, and that's why I'll support it.
Anyone else speaking against? Then I'll just go back to Councillor Hull to close the debate.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm chuffed to hear the support around the chamber. A couple of comments. So, in terms of council events and us putting money towards council events, one's happening right now that thankfully the council supported in the last term, and that is our first indulgence into the Fringe. And I believe, from what the staff tell me, that's been going very well. I didn't hear any complaints about that expenditure. In terms of Warrapringa, Mr. Mayor, maybe we need to walk around down there. Maybe some of our councillors need to go for a good walk and find out if you cross the bridge, you don't end up in Tasmania, you don't end up on an island. There are plenty of access and egress points once you cross the bridge. And if the ticketing arrangements were that the non-paying people were over there, then they can disperse in any direction they want, preferably not over the top of the water. And I think that's a real option, that the people in the cheap seats may well be on the other side of the bridge, but they'd have a spectacular view across the Sturt River towards where the stage might be anyway. That's a possibility. The other one is Perrybar Farm. I haven't heard Perrybar Farm mentioned in this place for years. And this council poured buckets of money into that one, buckets of money into Perrybar Farm. And, okay, if there's a maintenance issue down there that we need to address, well, I'm waiting for staff to tell me about it. But, only today I heard about Perrybar Farm a couple of times today, and prior to that it's been years. And it haunted this council for many years because of the amount of money that was wasted down there on pretty ill-conceived building projects. But anyway, look, back to this one. Let's see what our staff can do with this. Now, I've heard some words of trepidation. I'm in that camp as well. I don't want my name attached to a fizzer or a costly fizzer for the ratepayers. No way. But I think we're bigger than that. I think we can make educated decisions and give the staff the opportunity to prove that this can work, and let them actually, in terms of marketing, Councillor Gard. In terms of marketing, this is a marketing 101 project for you. Somebody mentioned schools. Let's get the community involved well in advance of this event. Let's work it and see how it goes.
Right, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, carried. Let's move on and we'll hear what staff have to say with some further work on it. Now, I just wonder if we've got a few items which... Oh no, we better just do the second... Could we do the second budget review and the corporate reports for no... Oh no, there's... Yeah, I suppose we could do those corporate reports for noting en bloc. The Seaview High one on 192 is just a progress report, isn't it? Just get staff advice on that. Yes, there's not really any substantial change. So that would be my suggestion, members, to knock over a few items. I'm sure you've all been through the financial stuff. Councillor Hutchinson's moving on block the second budget review as printed and the corporate reports for information and noting. That's seconded, Councillor Telfer. I will accept any questions on any of those items if people wish. Councillor Telfer?
In reading the second budget review, there are a number of favourable items, but they're favourable because they're on track but being worked on. Are we content with the progress that is happening on some of the major capital projects and its effect on our budgets?
Well, Mr. Lyons is acting Chief Executive Officer this week, so probably the best person to answer that one, Mr. Lyons.
Councillor Telfer, we are generally happy with progress against the projects that Council's on. We had an excellent briefing this morning to the Finance and Audit Committee about our new CAMS project management tool, which those that were there heard has been a singular success so far. That's about to be rolled out across all of our capital projects. The reports to be passed on block include the Capital Works update within the finance report. So it's not the Capital Works report, it's the Capital Works update within the finance report. That shows a good picture. It's not a perfect picture, and I will flag that this year we will have some carryovers, albeit a significant reduction in carryovers, and I think our financial position at this point of the year is very reasonable.
Any other questions,
With the Seaview High School community facilities, given that it's been deferred, is it still on track or is it blowing out because we've forgotten the lights and other aspects? And how many clubs are actually involved in the club rooms?
Ms. Dixon.
Through the chair, we're working through the concept designs and costings and just need a little bit more time, and a detailed report will be brought to council on the 26th of March, and that fits in for timing should council also want to apply for grant funding. There's a program happening in April. In regards to the club involvement, are you referring to the design and just keeping them updated on the status?
I'm not clear which clubs are actually going to be using that club room and how that's all going to function.
Through the chair, I'll need to take that on notice. I am aware that staff are going to set up a meeting with the ward councillors. They're proposing to meet on site and have a briefing. I'm also needing an update on the project, but we'll take that on notice and it will be included in the final report in March.
It is a limited progress report. Councillor Hutchinson.
Thank you, Your Worship. My favourite page is the sundry debtors report. Through to the staff, the civil services private works total, you have 9 individuals owing nearly $14,000. Can you please explain what those private works were for? Thank you.
Who can answer that one? Mr. Barnwell is here. Page 213.
And I note that the work has not commenced, so do we have an invoicing issue there if we're saying it's dead and we haven't invoiced? And
through the chair. When we say that we've invoiced them, but the works haven't commenced, we will actually not commence the works until the payment is received. So we will actually invoice the customer for those works and progress the works after that.
Okay, sure. And what sort of private works are we doing for individuals that cost that much money?
Yeah, it's probably things like crossovers and things like that, which is Tony might be able to explain.
But okay, thank you.
Well, about $1,500 each, if you're talking about that nine. All right. Well, then I'll put the motion. All of those moved en bloc. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. So now we can go to the community bus topic, page 115. Councillor Crossland.
Thank you, Your Worship. For members from the last council, remember this initiated probably in the middle of last year, and then we had a little bit of a hiccup with finding out that electric buses didn't go up hills. Look, this has been reworked. I'm really comfortable with the motion as proposed. Thank Mr. Lyons for working on it with staff. From the report, members will see we're fairly under provision for community buses. There's an undertaking from staff that we will make the existing buses fully used, but that still leaves us under providing to residents. It's my ambition that if we get the third bus, it might also improve attendances at our community centres. And I think for $30,000 a year for a couple of years until this can be reviewed to potentially purchasing a bus owned by the City of Marion is worthwhile. The suggestion is that we wait and maybe review the type of bus we purchase in a couple of years. From our expert on the infrastructure committee, apparently hydrogen buses are probably going to be commercially viable at that time, and I think it's worth the wait to make sure we don't jump the gun into the wrong technology. And I put this report and the motion as printed to members.
Seconded. Councillor Hutchinson, nothing to add. Anyone against? All those in favour, raise your hand. Carried unanimously. Thank you. Right, so now we can go forward to the Treasury Management Policy, page 125. Councillor Gard.
Your Worship, firstly, I would like to thank management for quite a comprehensive report in response to a motion that we carried back in July last year. I also did send out an email on Sunday which supplemented that report with some of my own thoughts. I need to apologise and make a retraction of the third paragraph of that email, which talked about the reducing of substantial borrowings with reserves. And I've been corrected on that, thanks to our Corporate Services General Manager. We've had exhaustive discussion on the subject of setting of policy, which is what I put a proposed motion at the bottom of my email about, and I'm prepared to retract that second point on the basis that, and I guess that it needs agreement that it be retracted, but the basis is that Corporate Services General Manager assures me that it is a Treasury management policy issue, and that when major decisions on funding of capital projects arises, then we need to isolate the topic of intergenerational equity. There needs to be clear definition, because even the Finance and Audit Committee is uncertain about the meaning of intergenerational equity. That was recorded this morning. And beyond that, it makes it difficult, therefore, to put good policy if the definition is unclear. The Corporate Services General Manager has put up a proposed definition. It's something that maybe we need to massage. But my biggest problem, and it does come through in my email of Sunday, is that there is the issue of hurt in rates collection. And that hurt means rates affordability. And at the lower end of the ratepayer scale, that is increasing. And we must remember how much we've expanded our rates collection, 60% in 10 years leading up to our last term, and that was a 36% real increase. So it's no surprise that people are starting to hurt, and therefore it's a sensitive issue as to what we do about intergenerational equity. When we deploy reserves, as we're proposing to do for new projects at this very moment, and a lot of reserves, then we must translate that into the fact that it is the current ratepayer that has afforded those reserves, not the future ones. And so that question needs to be asked, it needs to be put, and it needs to be considered. But I am happy, and I do have utmost confidence in our Corporate Services General Manager, that indeed that part of our organisation will put to us their thinking on the principle of intergenerational equity at the time when we're making such funding decisions. So I do endorse the overall report, and I put it to members that we should vote in favour of it with that condition, and I take that condition in good faith. It has been put to me in writing as well, but I think we do have a reliable management, and so we need to do just that, rely on it.
Thank you. Is that seconded, or is there a question? Councillor Telfer.
To the Corporate Services Director, can you summarise this very complex piece of legislation or policy about Treasury? Because it is very difficult when we don't actually have cash that backs our depreciation and provision for depreciation, and we have an asset sustainability reserve we can use. Can you clarify that for us? Because it's easy to say we've got 20 million put aside, but if places like Mitchell Park, that's been going 50 years, hasn't got 1 cent put aside for it, how do we work if we don't have those resources?
Mr. Mitchell.
Through the Chair, Councillor Telfer, so in Council's adopted budget and also in its long-term financial plan, there are a number of funding avenues available for all of our facilities. So we have in our repairs and maintenance budgets each year, money set aside predominantly through the land and property team to make sure that any basic repairs and maintenance are carried out where they're required. In addition, our asset management plans identify in a timely manner as to when renewals of different facilities are required, and all of that is actually linked into the long-term financial plan. When it comes to new facilities, so if we look at Edwardstown, for example, that wasn't just renewing Edwardstown, that was a full upgrade, which is effectively a new facility, and that's exactly what we're considering also for Mitchell Park.
I have a question following on from that. Mr. Mufsid, you talk about renewals being prescribed in our asset management plan, but from what I know, we got co-funding for Edwardstown, so that came up first. We would have done Mitchell Park, but we didn't get any co-funding in the state election. We might get some now. But Morfettville had some co-funding, so we did that first. And now we've got some co-funding for Cove, so that might be next on the list. It doesn't actually seem to be a plan. So where are these renewals mapped out in the asset management plan?
Your Worship, the renewals come directly from the asset management plans. With the actual buildings themselves, the facilities, we do have audits done on an ongoing basis, which actually informs asset management plans. With our major infrastructure, the asset management plans are actually well informed. We still have further work to do in regards to our facilities in particular. and that will continue to occur moving forward.
The other question I've got is about the actual amendment that's suggested to the Treasury management policy this evening, incorporating the idea of intergenerational equity. Councillor Gard's already talked about that. But the explanation, as far as it goes, is that there should be equitable sharing of the debt burden between the current and future generations. And there's one group that's missed out. It's the past generation. So, and this is relating back to Councillor Telfer's point. For X number of years, we've taken money from past ratepayers to balance the depreciation debits in our books, but they're not actually getting anything built with that until we come to the point now where we, say, decide to spend money on Mitchell Park. We have a choice, actually, between using their money, the past ratepayers, who have, we've taken money off already, and effectively that money, depreciation money that hasn't been spent, is in our reserves, in my simple understanding. That we also have our current operating surplus, so we can get money from that from more or less current ratepayers, and a loan gives us money from future ratepayers to fund the current project. So why do we think of intergenerational equity, as amended in this policy tonight, as between current and future without a reference to the past, Mr. Mifflin?
Your Worship, we can certainly extend it to incorporate that as well, because you're right, there has been revenues generated from our current community in the past, and we can certainly incorporate that in that definition if we wish.
Well, Councillor Hutchinson.
Thank you, Worship. Just following on from that point, it reminds me of a discussion that I had with you only recently about the visibility for dollar-for-dollar renewals. And that's something Infrastructure and Strategy Committee is being able to track those returns and monitoring on a dashboard, as I see it, a dial for depreciation, where an individual asset is at, and at the same time, how much have we got in the kitty for renewal as well. That's a great way for us to be able to visualise where we're at and where we're tracking. The other side of what you said there was around past ratepayers and the fact that we have taken their money and we are sitting on it. And that's why I've been advocating for drawing down on those funds, delivering now what we can. But at the same time, we need to balance the future generations to be able to cover those the lifespan of those assets. So it is balance, I think, is the answer to the question you're raising. It needs to be a balance. Current, and those loans that we'll have into the future.
Question, or was that a rhetorical question?
More entering the debate.
Clearly. All right. I will just make one comment in reply to your question, which was entering the debate. I want to acknowledge again Ms. Haywood, the new manager of the land and property section, and she has some really exciting ideas about the dull topic of sound asset management, and I'm expecting that we really will see improvement in that field. I mean, it's already improved from a few years ago, but I think we'll improve vastly in the next year or so. Does anyone want to move a motion since we're here? Councillor Gard moved. Oh, sorry, Councillor Telfer seconded it. Councillor Hutchinson was in the debate. I think I'm getting heat stroke. Anyone speaking against the motion? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. That was a discussion that had to be had. Thank you. So now we move to the LGA Canberra. I'm going to be polite. I'm going to be decorous. Okay, it's the Australian Local Government Association National General Assembly. I haven't had notice from anyone of any notices that people want to put, and also we have to decide who we would like to send as a delegate. I have to say, I personally want to bow out, despite the fact that the pastries, I believe, are very, very nice. Councillor Crossland.
Yeah, thank you, and I'm definitely not nominating. My question is, do we need to send anybody? And I'm stretching that to elected members and staff, because is there any value? Because I know staff have been before and elected members have been before, but I've never had any feedback that justifies the trip.
That's a good question. Would someone like to answer from staff? Ms. McKenzie.
Through the chair, council does not have to send anyone if they don't choose to. The meeting is run very similar to how the LGA runs their meetings, in that there is a number of motions put forward by various councils across Australia. Obviously, if you're not there, then you don't have a voting right. And there is various key speakers on the conference which are related to the topic.
So the follow-on from that is, I've been on council, this will be my fifth year, I've not had any feedback from anyone about the value of those keynote speakers or this meeting. Is there a reason for that?
I think you've heard all of the significant outcomes. Ms. McKenzie?
Through the chair, I attended last year's conference with previous Councillor Byram. There was various topics discussed. There was many things that we actually brought back and used from an administrative perspective. So, for example, Bernard Salt spoke on the demographics across Australia, and he's always fascinating to hear. I don't know if you've ever heard him before. There was discussions around electric vehicles, as BMW was the major sponsor, so they talked very much about what their plans are into the future. There was topics on emergency management, resilience across Australia. So there was various topics, obviously some based regionally and some based more on the metropolitan councils.
And Councillor, just getting back to Councillor Crossland's question, which is, if Councillor Crossland hasn't heard of all these great things, why is that?
Well, Councillor Byram did bring back a report to the council, so she did speak to the council about her learnings and what she took out of it. And there has also been a number of things that we have taken and picked up. I also did a report back to our management group of what my learnings were from attending the conference too.
Councillor Howell?
Mr. Mayor, anybody that goes to Canberra amongst our ranks has to have that approved by you, is that correct?
I believe that's right.
Right. Well, it just concerns me that during the last election, there was some criticism levelled at Councillor Byram from you, publicly, in writing, yeah, distributed to the community.
I'll just get some advice
you criticised her
order.
For going.
I'll just get some advice from governance in relation to the relevance of your point.
The Mayor is correct. The point that you are raising may be a valid point, but it's not in regards to the topic that's actually being debated here.
No,
the agenda item is in regards
to
the LGA conference and whether you want to put a delegate.
I'll be the judge if it's valid or not.
Order.
It's valid.
Order. Councillor Hull, for a start, you won't speak over managers when they're giving advice. That's just plainly rude. It's not in accordance with our meeting procedure. Secondly, you're actually ultimately not the judge of what is relevant or not in your own contribution. The chair can make a call on that, and ultimately it can be decided by the group.
Right. Can I ask another question? Will we be called out in future elections by you in terms of us attending this event? Will we get called out as a waste of expenditure?
The question is out of order.
I thought it would be.
All right. Anyone else? Councillor Masika.
Through the chair, thanks. I would like to support the motion the way it is before coming to point number four on the motion. And it's something which I've noted from the Councillor Crossland, that for the last 5 years, people have attended and they've never brought the report back. So what I would like to suggest, if we are going to agree with the motion and the support for people to attend the conference, we should make a point clear that they should bring the report back to the either elected members forum or through the general council meeting to get the feedback. That has to be noted in the motion.
Ms. McKenzie is advising me that that is generally what is done, that generally members and staff do bring a report back.
So just through the chair, the current elected member training and development policy states that if a member does attend a conference, that they are to provide a report back to the next council on the learnings from that conference.
And just to assist you, Councillor Masika, with the motion you're moving, can I ask if anyone expresses interest in going to this event? Because...
No, I wasn't expressing interest, but I thought the mayor being the head of the council, that if you can take opportunity to represent the council in that conference.
Thank you, but I'll be indisposed. If there are no other takers, Councillor Blescu?
Question. In regards to these...
It's one thing at a time. We need to deal with the question of whether any councillor is nominating, because otherwise Councillor Masika's motion is really just 1, 2 and 3, and if there are no motions, it's really just clause 1. So, and we don't have any motions that anyone's raised. I don't think we have any nominees, but don't want to discourage anyone if you want to. Councillor Blescu?
Well, that was the question, Your Worship.
Oh, was it?
Because, if someone applies to go, they essentially have to be approved. There's no discretion on behalf of the mayor, is there, in regards to that? Because what's been implied in previous discussion tonight is
that is correct. I mean, in this case, someone is nominated by council as a delegate, but the application would then come to the mayor, and I will not refuse, and I don't think any mayor ever has refused, any plausible application for some relevant gathering or conference, whatever it might be. I don't make a judgment about it. I might make a judgment about the person's motivations for going, if they have disclosed that in the form, but I don't. I'm not dogmatic about the nature of the conference. If Councillor Hull went to one on electric, energy, etc., that's fine. If somebody wants to go to another one on waste, that's fine. So it's presented to me and I sign it, unless there's a problem with the form. So last call for nominations and last call for any motions. Then really, Councillor Masika, your motion, as I understand it, is just that clause one, because there are no nominations or motions. So it's really just noting the report. Becomes very simple. Ms. McKenzie, is that all right? All right. Is that seconded? Councillor Hutchinson? Any further discussion? Then put the motion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. Okay. Now we can go down to motions with notice. There's a motion there on boundary realignment, and that comes out of some discussions that I've had with staff, and I really just wanted to kick things off. What this motion has already led to is some informal discussions with the Office of Local Government, and it's been pretty strongly suggested to us that that motion would be a complete waste of time unless there had first been a rezoning of the land. So that is the hint that's being given to us. So I'm happy, to be honest, if Councillor Crossland, it's in your patch, if you want to move it, are you interested?
I'm interested, but on the advice you've been given at the moment.
Yeah, so what I was going to suggest was, and I can hand this wording down to Ms. Thwaites, but that the Mayor write to the Boundaries Commission, that's the correct name, isn't it, Boundaries Commission, comma, as soon as possible after the land north of Sigma Road is zoned residential, comma. So it means that we don't waste our time or the Boundaries Commission's time. As soon as the rezoning goes through, and I understand the Minister is taking hold of that, Ms Dixon's confirming that, once the Minister in his own good time comes out with a rezoning that the subject land is residential, then the initial letter can go to the Boundaries Commission. And it's a two-stage process. One puts in almost like an expression of interest to the Boundaries Commission. They say, OK, well, if you want to do that, this is how complicated it is. We're going to have an investigation, or maybe we don't have an investigation. We're going to employ some investigators. It's going to cost you $500,000 or it's going to cost you $10,000. And then if you want to, the proponent can then decide to go ahead with a full-scale submission, which obviously is more work. So that's the process, essentially. And by the sounds of it, we should just wait for the rezoning, then send this off. They'll write back to us and tell us, essentially, the scope of the submission, which would then follow. I can say, just inform members as well, that the City of Onkaparinga Chief Executive and Mayor have been informed, not of the precise motion, but of the proposal, in essence, and informally there hasn't been any objection coming back. So, but that would be uncovered through a more formal process if they want to argue about this bit or that bit or that corner. That will come out in due course. I mean, I don't think at this point we need to be too worried about the precise GIS locations, etc.
So I'm happy to move with that amendment, or it's not an amendment, with that motion, sorry.
The motion as now printed. Did you wish to speak any further to it? Councillor Gard, seconded. And to speak?
Yes, obviously it's a very practical requirement, and obviously there's some sense in correspondence with the neighbouring council. I was going to ask also, Your Worship, whether there's any sense in bracketing that notification with the Seacliff Park development. It's almost the same case, if not the same case.
Well, it's a very good question, Councillor Gard. When this motion was first drafted, it was thought that it might be so easy that it would be rubber stamped and go through quite quickly, and it would be a good test case because the Boundaries Commission hasn't considered any of these yet since the legislation only came in 1st of January. As we've heard, it's a bit more complicated than I imagined, probably a lot more complicated than I imagined it should be. So once this is out of the way, I think that's probably the next discrete piece of boundary that we should address, and I'll take up that issue with staff about how to go about it. Good question. Is there anyone speaking against the motion? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. All right. Over the page, final motion for the evening. Look, it's another one drafted by the Mayor. I don't know, Deputy Mayor, want to throw that in? So moved as printed, Councillor Pfeiffer. I will just comment that although there was no budget line referred to, I assumed that because it's a low-cost innovation that it could be carried on within existing budgets. Would staff just like to comment on that aspect, please?
Through the Chair, I can confirm that we'll wear that this year, but I will probably make a small increase for 1920.
Thank you, Councillor Pfeiffer.
Yeah, look, I'll only very briefly speak to this. Members, we've had the situation in the past where, you know, we've spent, you know, sometimes up to $200,000 redeveloping a playground, for example, and then basically the builders walk off site and take down the fences and that's it. So this is really about, you know, actually celebrating our wins and ensuring that the community, often it's the community who are, you know, two, three, four, five houses down, they're the ones who have had to put up with the trucks going past every day. They're the ones who have had to put up with the noise, put up with the dust. They're the ones who are deeply invested in these assets. But, you know, I think it's a piece of... Obviously, they're getting an asset not too far from their house, but it's an acknowledgement of what they've gone through for sometimes 6 to 12 months to actually get to that point as well. You know, we do some great work out there in the community, and all too often it gets either just forgotten or swept under the carpet and we move on to the next project. So I think this is a great motion and I commend it to Council.
Seconded, Councillor Telfer.
I'd just like to say that I would have liked the Finnis Street streetscape actually to have had an event, but when we move to the Sturt Road streetscape, that's obviously not going to be applicable for an event. So I think the open space people often do small events well. We could look at us streetscapes when they're completed as well. I think they're significant. And also when there are significant community facility upgrades and we need a point at which we say it's open and we're moving forward.
Indeed, Councillor. I think Finnis Street was one of the examples I thought of, but it's getting a bit late now to celebrate something that we finished quite some time ago. But that sort of thing would give a great sense of community if you had a bit of a street party for or a morning tea or something. Anyone speaking against the motion? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. And I declare the meeting closed. Oh, well, questions with notice, motions without notice, questions without notice, other business meeting closure. No, there being none, I close the meeting. Thank you.